Hello and welcome to That Tech Pod, where we discuss all things e-discovery, data privacy, cybersecurity, and tech innovations. I'm Laura Milstein, and I know a little bit about technology.
And I'm Gabby Schulte, and I know even less about technology, but I am here to learn.
That's why each week we're talking to heavy hitters in the industry to help us break down these topics. Today, Gabby, who are we talking to?
Today, we're talking to Sarah Ledgerwood. Sarah is a manager in the cybersecurity, privacy, and forensics team at PwC Ireland. Sarah is a knowledgeable data privacy and protection compliance manager with an extensive background in e-discovery and information governance. She has 20 years of experience across the legal, technology, and marketing industries. Sarah, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for having me, both of you. It's wonderful to be here.
Absolutely. So before we get into all of the tech, can you just tell us a little bit about your journey in the industry, how you got to where you are today?
Sure. And I just want to mention right off the bat that I am on the Women of eDiscovery board here in Dublin with Laura. So it's a great connection.
And woo!
Yeah.
Shout out to the Women of eDiscovery self-proclaimed best chapter, Dublin.
Exactly. So we're excited to get that going and in the e-discovery and privacy, information governance, cybersecurity, the whole realm of trying to get that chapter going here in Dublin. My bio there pretty much summed it up. I started in the industry, I hate to say 20 years, but I guess that's how long it's been. Now and I.
Hey, you're a certified expert then. So
yes, exactly.
That's why we have you on.
I have an interesting perspective from the old days, the pioneer days of e-discovery. I went to law school and then I started off in e-discovery when no one knew anything about it. Maybe they still don't, as you were just saying earlier. But really, lawyers, everyone, it was brand new and it was an exciting time. And it was just really that time period where people started communicating electronically instead of the old means. So this whole process of needing to manage data and find evidence electronically and all of that is how we started off. And interestingly enough, we're still there years later. And I think the main point of what's going on now in the world of data is really that information governance side and how to manage your data. And it really just gets harder and harder as data explodes. And there's so many different facets of it. So now I've moved more onto the data privacy and data protection side over here in Europe, especially since the GDPR came into effect in 2018. It's been booming industry as so many companies grapple with what to do, how to comply with GDPR, what to do with all the data they have. And I'm helping companies now over here set up their privacy programs and become compliant as all the privacy laws change.
Yeah, you have a really interesting background from one, the perspective of living on, you know, bordering, you know, British Columbia, being in the Idaho area, yeah. Moving to Seattle, living in Washington, D.C., and now you're, you know, in Ireland. And so, first of all, I love that. I always support people that really test out different areas and get to know what it's like to live and work in different sort of communities. So I admire that and think that's really awesome. And I also do want to agree the Dublin chapter. I don't know if we had said it enough yet, but Women of eDiscovery Dublin is the best chapter.
You've said it once before.
Absolutely. I'll keep up.
Oh, did we? I can remember. But Sarah, I want to dive into some of the things around your background when it comes to privacy, AI, and GDPR more specific. So when you mentioned that GDPR, you know, in 2018, this is when it became a thing, and people in the US, they really look at the EU and say, oh, you're doing privacy in a more efficient, more responsible way. And here, I think, you know, you look at California's kind of getting there and a couple other places. But then I recently heard that in the UK, they're kind of pushing back on GDPR a little bit, and there may be some changes happening there. Is it different? Obviously, yes, I know it's different. But can you tell us more about some of the differences being over there compared to here, and maybe even other areas that you know about?
Sure. Yeah, it's such an interesting time right now. All the things you mentioned, there's so many developments happening in all of those areas. I think number one, being here versus the US, it's really been an eye-opening experience to see how privacy and data protection is handled, because in the US, obviously, there's no federal privacy law yet. And really just the emphasis on protecting personal data hasn't been something that's been at the top of the agenda in the States. While over here with GDPR, that really pushed the compliance front. But in Europe in general, for many, many years now, there were other laws that were protecting personal data. They were kind of setting the standard for privacy for many years now. And it was really just that implementation of GDPR, getting that into effect with the threat of the big fines, where I think that kind of brought it to the top of the news and the top of people's awareness. And so there really is this diametric difference between the US and Europe on that front. And I would say GDPR, it sets a standard for the toughest personal data protection law in the world. And so I think the way things are going, the US is starting to get hip to this. You know, they're starting to see that personal data protection is important. They're starting to pass laws. Sorry, that's my dog there scratching.
It's okay. we welcome dogs on this podcast.
This is still home environment over here. So anyway, with California and the CCPA, obviously things are moving in this direction of wanting to protect personal private data and making that more of a priority in the US. And then the third thing you mentioned that's also been very interesting being over here with the UK is Brexit happened while I've been here. And while the UK was under the GDPR scheme and part of the EU, they've obviously left the EU now. And there's been so many developments on that front. They were granted the adequacy decision so that they could keep going. We could keep sharing data with the UK. But now, yeah, now there's rumblings of them wanting to have their own data privacy law. So who knows what's going to happen in that on that front. Makes it particularly interesting here in the Republic of Ireland. I don't know if people are aware of the landscape here, but it's a really small island where part of the island's in the UK and part of it is in the EU, but with no real border. So we've got some really interesting challenges going on here. And I think being over here, you're kind of in the hot spot of data privacy, because Dublin, a lot of the US companies have their corporate headquarters here, their EU corporate headquarters in Dublin, and the data protection commissioner here has a lot of influence because of that. So it's just a constantly interesting environment going on here. And it's been really fun just being kind of at the top of that.
Yeah, what an identity crisis for Ireland.
Absolutely.
So you said you help companies become privacy compliant. So can you just like outline some of the challenges you're facing with that right now, especially since you just mentioned things like the pushback on privacy laws and amid the fallout of Brexit? Have you started to see that? Has that started to impact you at all or not yet? And you're just kind of like, okay, we're seeing what's going to happen with that.
Yeah, I think there's been an impact on multiple levels. As far as the biggest challenges that came immediately after Brexit was we weren't really sure how we could share data with the UK anymore. So that was at the top of the agenda. We were worried in the wake of the Schrems II decision that happened. Just the whole data sharing outside of the EU since the UK left the EU, how would that proceed? And then, of course, extended to the US as well. So that was one top concern. And then as far as challenges that I see people are facing right now in companies, it's interesting because for the most part, there's two scenarios. One is there's international companies that have presence, you know, all over the world. And so their biggest challenge, I would say, so if you're, let's say you're based in Ireland, but you have US companies, you have China, you have, you know, all over the world, is trying to implement a uniform privacy program that would cover the highest data protection standard and cover your whole company as a whole. It's very challenging because each country has its own unique data protection laws. You want to set up really just one universal uniform privacy program for your company. So the most part, what I've, you know, what we've been doing is following that GDPR standard as the highest standard. And if you use that the way it's been so far, using that as your baseline for compliance, you can generally make the mark of other countries' standards. But then there are new things happening, like China, for example. A big one that's about to happen is they've passed their own privacy law that comes into effect in November. And I've seen lately clients are concerned about that. Okay, now how do we compare GDPR to this PPIL, this new China data privacy law? What are we going to do about that? I think that whole, like, just grappling with the how do we make a privacy program that covers us so we're not, you know, violating things even unintentionally.
Sarah, how are we going to deal with that?
It's tough. It's interesting. And actually, on the note of technology, we've been really having good success with using a technology, a software program that's called OneTrust. And that has been just implementing technology into client sites to where that first of all, they recognize now that, wow, we've really got to prioritize data privacy, because before I don't think anyone did, especially in the US, you know, so they wouldn't have like a dedicated data privacy team, for example, you know, whereas here that's become in Europe, that's become kind of standard, you know, to have a data privacy team. Mm-hmm. So implementing technology into that process. So, you know, so when you have something like, you know, that you're going to have to do, you know, a DPIA, a data protection impact assessment, like you want to put in a uniform process there. This is how we're going to handle it and use technology to help you get those completed.
Yeah, you made me think of something a little bit off topic, but when you said OneTrust, so Gabby and I were recently at the InfoGov World Magazine's InfoGov World Conference, and this year it was a virtual conference. So you come in and you build your little emoji and you walk around the conference, and we saw they are one of the sponsors there. So it triggered it, but it made me think of, you know, before you'd go to a conference and you'd register online, you just put your info and then you show up to the conference, there's a badge, you walk around. And now, due to obviously all of these things, there's some good to it where you can go to conferences in, you know, different countries that you wouldn't necessarily have been able to go to before because you have those access, and it does feel like you're in another world. It's really bizarre. And it's like, it's nice in a way because you can be at those conferences. You can actually talk to people at the conference when you're there, like you're in a weird video game. But it's also, you know, less personal, and I'm gaining less information in a lot of ways, and things are kind of at you. But it does make me think of the data protection side of that, where I had to, when we registered, we had to put our emails, sign up, and then we had to actually download the world onto our computer. And it's said when we went to it, you know, we advise, you know, to not do it on your work computer because there may be some issues. And I think it's because work computers, a lot of them are built with some privacy where they don't allow certain things. Like some computers, you can't put a USB in because that company doesn't allow that. And so you're having to then use a personal computer to download this game, which is this app, to then interact with people in a real-time thing. And I'm wondering, is that really private? Is your data, like when I'm going in and I'm learning, that has to be tracked somewhere where they can then see, okay, Laura went to this booth, she learned about this, she interacted with these people, and you can almost track who I'm talking to and what I'm doing. I can't imagine that there isn't a way to track that. And if I'm going to a real world conference, sure, maybe Gabby can call you and say, Sarah, just so you know, Laura was over there talking to this person at that booth. But there's no one really tracking that or monitoring that. And in these virtual conferences, I'm wondering that. And I'm wondering if somebody hacks into one of these conferences, do they get all my data from that? What do they know? And it just came to me on this, but I want wanted to share that.
Interesting.
Now
I guess that's interesting. I guess I just would question, you know, what personal data are you actually sharing there? Like true personal data.
Well,
you know,
but you're look at vendors. So if you are, you know, at PwC and you're looking at implementing things and you come and you talk to me and you say, what is a theorist doing? And then somebody at, you know, Ona sees that and they're targeting you, they can know, how do we approach Sarah? Because we saw she talked to Laura at a theorist who's a competitor or something. We're not a competitor, but you get my point. It's things of that nature that it's still information gathering. I mean, you look at when it comes to health records, you go to a doctor and then the insurance company would love to know all your medical stuff because then they're, it's going to affect their insurance. So I wonder if in some capacity there is some sort of concern with what type of data is being shared and what that looks like in a virtual, you know, conference world now.
Yeah, that's interesting because I think there's two things there. One scenario is more like obtaining marketing data, you know, and using it for marketing purposes, which is separate from like very sensitive medical data, you know, which would have to be personally identifiable. You know, you'd have to be able to track that. You have to be able to be identified from that data, you know, to be protected under GDPR. But marketing data, that's a whole separate conversation that's, of course, been in the news so much because people don't like feeling like they're tracked, you know?
Yeah, if there's a hacker currently listening, can you please hack every tech conference and just throw that TechPod logo all around it?
Yes, exactly.
But also, this is just if you want to do, we're not suggesting it, just putting that out there. So, Sarah, getting back to more of privacy, since I went on a tangent in Ireland, I think there are some interesting things when you talk about Brexit. And even earlier when we were talking about different passports and what that looks like. In Spain, they currently have a system where there's a barcode. So you go in and you scan the barcode to say, I'm vaccinated, for example.
Yeah, we have that in Ireland too.
Yeah, in Canada, they have the passports. Yeah. What do you think about that? Because when it comes to security, I mean, because you think about the factor as well of going back to health, if I have a health condition where I can't get the vaccine as an example, that's information maybe I don't want to talk about, but because I don't have a barcode, I almost am forced to disclose that in some capacity. Where's the line of protection and things like that?
This is so interesting, actually. This is really a current topic that's so interesting and really showcases the difference between the US and Europe so well on that front. And it's so funny because while the US typically wouldn't prioritize protecting personal data, they're being so hardline about, you know, we're not going to have the QR codes, we're not going to have vaccine status. And over here, you know, Europe just immediately went to that. Okay, everyone's going to have to go anywhere. You have to have this QR code. How's your vaccination status? Everyone's going to know it. To travel, to go inside a restaurant. You know, we've gone down that road. It definitely holds personal data. It's very interesting. But again, I think the way they've set up those QR codes is technically it's not supposed to personally identify you, I guess, but I don't think that works that way. Cause like, for example, in Ireland, if you want to go to a restaurant, you have to show that QR code plus your ID to get in.
And I'm actually just wondering, has there been any, from whatever you can sense, like any pushback among EU citizens? Cause, I mean, again, it's just a weird flip flop that normally Americans, like, I think now we're becoming more data privacy aware, but that's just not something that's in, like, especially younger kids growing up and just sharing every single piece of information about every second of their lives. You know, that's just not something we're all very concerned about. But when it comes to this particular subject, it's a very controversial hot topic. Has there been any pushback among, you know, like everyday people in Ireland or whatever these QR codes and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there has been an undercurrent of some, you know, revolting against that. For example, in France, I was spent the summer over there. There tend to be the ones that would protest, you know, be out there protesting these things.
And right, it's in their blood.
There's definitely been protests. Yeah, it's called the sanitary health pass. That, you know, they have, you have to have it even to get on a train there. Like, you literally just basically can't do anything without having it. So there have been protests. It's just that the system of government, you know, there's when the is so different from the states, whereas in the states it's state by state, you know. Here it would be more like in Ireland, you know, they would just say, okay, all of Ireland has to do it this way, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Actually, that brings me back to kind of what we were talking about earlier, kind of, you know, the post-Brexit sort of situation. What do you know of, you know, with companies in the U.S.? Because obviously there are you know, location specific laws. But as you said, you know, there's everybody's on the cloud. There are U.S. companies based in Dublin. There are, you know, like, so it's not really, it's probably very, very hard to be compliant and be sure that you're checking all your boxes there. But what are some of the challenges, you know, when you're working with U.S. companies, and you have, you know, say you have European clients that follow a certain, that have certain privacy laws, but then there's maybe data transfers to U.S. companies. What are some of the challenges in that? Go ahead.
Yeah. So I think that the challenges, you know, the way that it came down after the Schrems decisions, and there were different mechanisms put in place. So, you know, there was this last one, the Privacy Shield. We could still transfer data from Europe to the US through that. And then that was invalidated in Schrems too. So people were really grappling with how in the heck are we going to do this? You know, the Data Protection Board has since released guidance to help you exact step by steps how you can still do it. It's complicated, and really the onus is on the company. It puts a lot of burden on the company to figure these things out and use different transfer mechanisms. And I would say that one thing that's changed that people have started doing is just segregating their data more, so they don't need transfers as much, you know, so they won't let their data leave the country, you know, so that is one thing. Or they're hosting, for example, in e-discovery, if you have, you know, a company with the US and European presence, you would just only host your data within that country instead of maybe in the past you would have put it in a data center in the US, or people would have been able to access that, you know, access relativity or whatever in the US. And now it's just much more segregated. So it'll be like your case is in the UK and that's it. You have your data center in the UK. The data gets hosted there, you know, for example. It just it's gotten complicated. Whereas before you could freely transfer data. It really has been interesting to see how that's gone down. And I know a lot of changes are still going to be coming. So,
right. And, you know, as you just mentioned earlier, you know, China just kind of announced their new privacy laws being taken into effect this fall. And obviously the EU and the UK have their own. And, you know, the US is just so behind on all of that.
True.
I'm wondering, like, what's the kind of outlook among the global data privacy world? Is it like, oh, the US is like, what is the US's data privacy global standing? And like, how does that compare to other places? Is it like, God, they're so behind and whatever?
Yeah, I think it's, In Europe, like I said, GDPR is just the strictest, highest standard, you know, so that is like the global highest standard. And everyone who wants to be very, very top compliant will probably just set up their privacy program according to GDPR standards. And then in the US, I think people just, the perception is that, you know, that there's just no protection of personal data because primarily because of government surveillance programs, that just would not be allowed here, which is at the crux of Schrems and his complaints. You know, it's just, well, I'm not going to let my data be transferred from Facebook Europe to the US because according to the US government, you know, they can access my data at any time.
Yeah.
We like to know what all our citizens are doing at any moment.
Every moment.
Yeah, exactly.
But when it comes to vaccine status, no.
Yeah, don't tell us anything. Don't tell us.
There's a huge problem. But I do think that the way this is going to go is that ultimately the U.S. will have a federal privacy law. I do believe that it will happen at some point. It's just going to take a while because it's going to be hard to get that through.
Before you ask your question, Laura, I would be so interested to talk to like a psychologist who also is an expert in data privacy, just to like provide some insight on the dichotomy that we're talking about between
EU citizens.
If there's anyone listening, I just want to know, like, because
what a mixed background.
I know, because it's just so interesting. Like, you know, EU citizens are so used to having their data protected. Americans are not. In my view, don't care that much, but when it comes to this very particular thing, it's just so different. And I want to know like what is going on there in the mind.
Can we visualize that for a moment? Just somebody going to their psychiatrist, sitting down, and just being like, "I need to talk about my data. I don't feel safe."
Love it.
I bet it's out there. I bet it is out there.
We should find
please
that.
Find us at that tech pod. All right, go ahead, Laura.
Amazing.
Sorry.
So I wanted to ask sort of two questions here. So one is, do you think there will ever be some sort of global universal privacy law? Because you look at something like COVID, and that is a global impact to all of us. But honestly, there are tons of things that globally impact us, and yet we are separate countries for a reason. So I go back and forth if that's even a good idea or feasible, but what are your thoughts on that? And that's part one.
I definitely don't see that. That seems like absolutely impossible considering, you know, the U.S. can barely even for themselves get going on that. I just think that there's too many fundamental differences in governments. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, the EU itself is a complex body. You know, I mean, that was formed years ago and they have their own inner problems, you know? I mean, I just don't see how that would be possible, but I guess you never know.
Should it be possible?
I don't know. I just don't think, it seems impossible. Basically.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And then I wanted to follow up with that for our everyday listeners, average people out there that are hearing this and probably have a lot of views when it comes to privacy. Are there any sort of global privacy tips that you could give to our everyday viewers or advice that you would share to people around global data privacy?
Like just a person who's an individual concerned about their own data privacy?
Yeah, just any, you know, some of our listeners that are on here, they don't get to talk to experts like you every day. And so I think it's always good feedback to say, you know, here's something that I would recommend, or here's a tip that might be helpful to people, or consider this, or even if you just want to just completely scare people and just tell them, anybody who does this, this is happening.
I would say, you know, move to the EU if you want your personal data to be
there you go.
Protected, or maybe California now, because California is pretty strong. But then, you know, the whole US overarching government surveillance program.
Yeah, half your paycheck will be taken, but your data will be safe.
And the IRS always finds you even when you move. So, you know, that's a tough one. In the EU, I think it's pretty well set up now. And other places in the world, it's happening too. You know, even to see that happening in China, I think is fascinating because
they're
not exactly known for, you know, enforcing private rights of people.
Do you want to move there now, Sarah? Do you want to move to mainland China? Because, you know, your data might be
Well, I wonder what the because that is a good point. Like, it has to be something, you know. It's doubtful that it's actually for the individual rights of the citizens of China and something else going on. Well, so I wonder what that is.
How high is your social score? Because that will tell you how secure your data gets to be.
Laura's obsessed with the social
score. Yeah, it's coming.
Love it.
You'd be low on the social score.
Are you kidding? My social score would be the highest of all time. And people would be harassing me to steal from my social score. They'd be like,
so low.
What are we going to do? I'm afraid of it. I don't like it at all. I don't support it. I'm against it. I'm open about it.
Awesome. Seriously.
You know what that reminds me of in speaking about China? They recently passed this, or they recently created this mandate. I don't know if either of you guys are familiar, of limiting the amount of video gaming adolescents are allowed to do.
Yeah. I threaten my kids with that.
I know, yeah. Like, I'm sure some parents are like, yeah.
But like, I passed that in my house, too.
Yeah. I said, see what they're doing in China? I did.
Yeah, but it's funny because and the reason why is because they are saying, you know, we are protecting our future workers and our future thought leaders and scientists and doctors from becoming dumb from playing all video games.
Oh, no.
All the time.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was funny. Also, just another funny like juxtaposition of like that sort of crackdown on your social behavior and then implementing a privacy law.
Yeah, it is. So. No, it is. That is interesting because that kind of goes across the EU too, where like we were saying, it's much easier to crack down on social behavior and just regulations, you know, but at the same time, we have this very high standard for protection of personal data, you know?
Yeah. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. I think this has been a really awesome conversation. I definitely learned a lot. I'm sure our listeners learned a lot. So yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, that was fun. Thanks so much.
We just talked to Sarah Ledgerwood from PwC Ireland. Tell me your tech takeaways.
I think today's episode was really diving into the data privacy on a global scale, but we did kind of touch on multiple different range of data privacy concerns, I can't speak today, and issues within that. And I think there's a lot of interesting things. I mean, first of all, we have to talk about the unknowns. We just don't know enough. And I think we're in a world where it's going to constantly be changing and constantly putting us in a state of unknown. And it's questioning, who do you trust? How do you trust it? But I am concerned with the changes of privacy and wondering, you know, I found it interesting how the U.S. is definitely behind when it comes to data privacy in comparing to Europe. But then, you know, as Sarah was mentioning, when it comes to the passport, we're saying, no, we don't need to prove that we're vaccinated. We don't even need to get vaccinated. It's our choice as Americans what we want to do. And so it is an interesting topic on things like that. And I also was, you know, I'm curious of what's going to happen with Brexit. And I think we've all been wondering about Brexit for like 2 years. Like, it's a never ending. Has it happened? Is it happening? What changes will happen? And being in the Ireland, as she mentioned, the Republic of Ireland, where part of that is in the UK, what is that going to look like? How is that going to work? And so those are things that really hit me today.
It's a lot.
It was a lot. We talked about a lot.
We did talk about a lot. No, I agree. I think the Brexit question is very interesting. Like, how will EU, UK, global data privacy change in the wake of Brexit? So I think that's something we're all going to be watching. Laura, how do people find us or follow us if they want to see what we're going to be up to in the next couple of weeks?
Yes, everyone should head over to our website, www.thattechpod.com. If you haven't already, scroll to the bottom, enter your email, and subscribe to us so you don't miss any of the new and exciting things that we do have coming out in the upcoming weeks. And if you want to contact us to be on our show, to recommend someone for our show, to ask us about sponsorship opportunities, or just suggest some cool topics for us or make comments on what we've been talking about, feel free to reach out to us at contact@thattechpod.com. If you haven't already, you should check us out on LinkedIn/thattechpod or tweet at us at Twitter @thattechpod.
And if you want an easy way to help us out, go to Apple Podcasts or anywhere you're listening to this podcast and just write us a 5-star rating and review. We would love you forever, Brexit or not.
That's true. We will.